pitched the ball to Bell. That's a field. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. No! Rebound! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
Okay, welcome back to the podcast. Appreciate you guys joining us today. Don't forget, you can check everything out, all of our podcasts as well as written work on pistolsfiringblog.com. And the podcasts are also on iTunes, so you can listen to them and or download them for free there. Today we have Kevin DeShazo of Fieldhouse Media on to talk a little bit about social media and Twitter and just kind of what the role of both of those things have been and will be going forward in the college athletic community today. So let's go to the podcast. Okay, Kevin DeShazo, appreciate you joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me on.
Okay, Fieldhouse Media, I want to talk about that here in a little bit, but, you know, kind of this social media wave, this Twitter wave that we're all riding right now, and it's really kind of funny because it's the reason we met. What was it, about like a year ago, year and a half ago?
Almost two, I think.
Yeah, so what is, tell me about how Fieldhouse Media interacts with social media and kind of what its role is in the social media world.
Yeah, so what Fieldhouse Media is actually birthed out of conversations that you and I had just talking about different athletes on Twitter, different media personalities, specifically sports media personalities, and how they use Twitter and just had no clue what they were doing.
you want to give an example?
Let's go with Gottlieb. That's probably one that we talked about quite a bit. We'll just throw that out there. This is an OSU blog. But retweeting every single comment, you know, that he's getting, and instead of just individually replying to the person. And so he's one example, but, you know, we talked about how these kids were just messing up and adults are messing up, and that somebody needs to be out there showing them the proper way to use it. And so talked about it enough, and finally I said, okay, I'm just going to do it. And so the biggest thing is coming at it from the perspective that Twitter and social media is a good thing. I think the way these kids have been taught or are being taught is don't get on Twitter, don't make us look stupid, don't tweet anything dumb, don't get us in trouble, don't be a distraction, it's don't, and nobody learns that way. It's a tool that's there, it's not going away anytime soon, so let's invest our efforts into showing them how to use it well and how it can benefit them both now as a student-athlete and in the future in whatever business they go into.
Well, I think a lot of people look at Fieldhouse Media and they're like, okay, you know, that's cool, that's a cool company, but what if I'm a university, if I'm a college, how does that benefit me? What is your product that is benefiting me?
Yeah, so my saying to schools is that student athletes have the ability to be the greatest PR that a university has, especially now with social media. So before we could go to games, we'd watch. You know, let's say when I was in college, we'd go to games and you know, love the players, love Tony Allen, love the Grahams and John Lucas, but we saw them on the court, and maybe we saw them in class, but that was it. I mean, they had this, even as college athletes, they had this kind of godlike, untouchable status. What social media has done is taken that away. We can literally interact with them. Kevin Durant's story is a perfect example, where he comes and plays flag football with a bunch of college kids because he interacted with some fan on Twitter. So we go to universities and say, this is the power that your student athletes have. Like, this is what people are relating to. So let's invest in them, show them how to use this stuff well. And they're going to rally an incredible amount of support from their community, which is easy when people are winning. I use OSU as an example a lot, that it's great that they were winning and people loved them on Twitter. But it's also good if they're struggling, because if they're coming across well on Twitter, people are going to want to continue to support them, and they're going to have a reason to support them outside about, you know, whether they win on the field or on the court. they're going to invest in them because they understand their story and they understand their people, and they want to support them.
Yeah, and that's a great point about not only when teams are winning, it's, you know, it's fun to be on Twitter, it's fun to see what Brandon Whedon's saying or you know, Joseph Randall or whatever, but also when teams are losing, you really do have, and we've seen this with OSU's basketball team this year, you have an opportunity as a player to get on there and say, hey, we appreciate the fans supporting us. We're still going to play hard. And it, despite the negativity, it's kind of an endearing way for players to draw the fans in, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, perfect example with OSU basketball, they've been struggling in terms of OSU standards. But Twitter has made it hard for fans to give up on the team. They're brought on the court and they're getting better. I think we have to acknowledge on the court, they're obviously playing better, playing more as a team. But the way they've handled themselves on Twitter, and there have been a couple of issues, but overall, they've been positive. They're rallying fan support. Hey, come to the white out, come to the gray out, you know, whatever color shirts. Thanking fans for showing up. Maybe they're tweeting 5 minutes before tip off, but they're rallying support, you know, and it's making us want to pay attention to what they're doing.
Okay, I do want to talk about the tweeting 5 minutes before tip off because I was pretty hard on LeBrian for, it wasn't 5 minutes, but it was 45 minutes, which is, I mean, what are you doing in the locker room with your phone? Like, shouldn't, I don't know. None of that made sense to me. Like, shouldn't you be focusing on, I mean, aren't they having like a team meeting? Aren't they like, shouldn't they be pregame shooting? I mean, what are you doing in there?
Yeah, I was not a fan of that. Now, it's hypocritical of me to say because my phone is not attached to my hip. It's attached to my face pretty much. I mean, I'm staring at my phone all the time, so it's hard for me to criticize him for doing that. But at that time, it felt like not the right thing to be doing. And that's the point, is that maybe he was focused. I mean, he clearly came out and played well, you know, tweeting 45 minutes before the game didn't disrupt his game. But it's the perception of what that gives off. Oh, he's not focused. He's not ready. Well, we don't know that, but him tweeting gives us that impression. And so that's where the education comes in. It's like, it was a harmless tweet, rallying fan support. You know, wasn't anything negative, anything controversial, but the fact that you're tweeting 45 minutes before a game in general gives off a bad image.
Yeah. And you know, I've seen that you've really been focused on, you know, a lot of schools these days are kind of, or I guess teams, football teams, basketball teams are banning their players from Twitter. Why? I mean, I think that's a bad idea. Why do you think that's a bad idea?
Oh gosh. Let me get on my soapbox real fast. I literally get angry when I see that. Like I physically get mad when I see coaches and teams banning Twitter. I think that comes from two things. It comes from fear and lack of education on social media. And so if you address the lack of education, then you eliminate that fear. But it's just, I wrote a blog post today talking about how for athletes, social media is a blessing, a curse, and a scapegoat. And I'll use we can talk about Kansas, we can talk about North Carolina women's basketball, we can talk about a lot of examples, but I'll do North Carolina women because it's most recent. Last week, they banned Twitter. They had just lost, I think, two good teams. So, coach, we need to refocus. We're gonna ban Twitter. That's going to fix it. And the players are saying all the right things. Yeah, you know, we do need to refocus. We need to dial in. And they go beat two, I think, sub-500 conference teams. Hey, they're fixed. You know, look at how it's paid off. Today they lost by 40 to Duke. I mean, did they lose their focus in a week? I mean, if they were tweeting, were they going to lose by 50? I mean, what is that?
Maybe they need to cut out Facebook too.
Right? Are they going to stop dating people? Are they going to stop doing homework? I mean, where do we end with the distractions? I spoke at an event in Tulsa in the fall, Collegiate Athletic Leadership Symposium, about 50 or 60 ADs, and it was perfect as I'm driving in. Listening to Tulsa, or I think this is a sports animal, listening to it in Tulsa, talking about Roy Finch. And this is, you know, mid-October, so whatever week that is in the football season. And at that point, Roy Finch had been a disappointment based on the expectations everybody had for him. And somebody in the Tulsa world had just written an article about now Finch was focused on football. You know, we're 6 weeks or 4 or 5 weeks into the season. And he said, you know, I've got girl issues behind me, family issues behind me. I'm now focused on football. And I said, so I was speaking that morning. I was like, okay, you know, here's an elite football player talking about his distractions. He didn't list social media as a distraction. He talked about family and girls. So are we going to stop dating? I mean, is that the next thing we're going to do? I mean, where do we stop? And so banning is just, it doesn't solve anything. It's an excuse, and it's an easy way out. And they always focus on Twitter as if that's it. But they're still using Facebook. They're still, you know, doing whatever they're doing, but they just ban one medium and think that fixes it.
So you're more focused, or your company is more focused on turning this medium into a positive thing, correct?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just not, we always hear about the negative things. We never hear about Twitter being used in a positive way. And that was one thing, talking with some athletic directors after that in Tulsa, Bubba Cunningham from North Carolina, he was at Tulsa at the time. He said, I never really thought about Twitter being a good thing. He said, that never even crossed my mind that this could actually be a good thing for a program. So that's what we're trying to do, is change the perception of this thing is bad, it's a distraction, and you know, blah, blah, blah. It's a good thing. Your players are using it, so let's show them how to use it well. Does that mean there won't be discipline? No, of course. I mean, they're going to mess up, their kids, and they need to have the freedom to mess up. But let's show them how to use it well.
Give me an example of somebody, or it doesn't have to be an individual, but maybe a team or a program that is using Twitter and other forms of social media in a way that benefits the program. And I really think this kind of goes beyond what your PR is. I think it helps in recruiting. I think it helps what the players see as kind of the perception of the program. So who's a person, or give me both. Give me a person and a program that have both kind of benefited from Twitter and social media.
This is going to be a weird example because he doesn't actually use Twitter. But let's go with Bob Griffin, right? I mean, social media got him the Heisman. He had a decent year.
But he had
a decent year, and I've got some friends in the Baylor program, and they do a tremendous job, and they're really good people. But they did a tremendous job with his Heisman campaign on social media, and he doesn't even have a Twitter account, but they were able to use that to get him not only in the Heisman race, but to win it. So that's an individual that doesn't necessarily use it, but showing how social media did benefit him. Matt Barkley, I think, does a tremendous job for USC. And it helps that he's at USC, but he does a really good job. As a program, I'm trying to think of a good program. I don't know that there are just a ton of programs that have a decent amount of people that use it well. I mean, I think the OSU football team did a pretty good job. With Whedon and Blackman, they both, Randall used it really well. I think Jeremy Smith is good on Twitter. Tracy Moore, for the most part, is good.
Well, I felt like Whedon was somebody that at first was kind of Gottlieb-ish and didn't really, mm-hmm. He would just kind of retweet everything and didn't really understand it. But I felt like he really worked to understand it and use it to his advantage to build up fan support. And I don't know. I really thought and I can't believe I'm breaking down the social media use of a college football player right now, but I feel like the way he used it really evolved as the year went on.
Yeah, and I totally agree. He was Gottlieb light. I mean, he was retweeting everything, and I remember him tweeting, it was actually in July, man, I finally figured something out where I'm not going to have to annoy. He tweeted something, I'm not going to annoy all my followers anymore. And one of the local news people was like, what do you mean? And it's like, well, I figured I don't have to retweet everything. I can just reply directly to that person. And the news person, the reply was like, what? And it was kind of, there has to be something more. Like, he didn't just figure out something this basic, you know, existed on Twitter. There's got to be something more to this. And it was, no, he realized he could just reply individually to people and retweet the ones where he's getting asked that 50 times, then retweet that so you don't have to answer it 50 times. Yeah, he put a lot of effort into it. And I think what was interesting about Whedon, I talked to his wife before that event in Tulsa and asked her, so, you know, what kind of responses does he get on Twitter, because we're obviously a polarized state when it comes to OSU and OU, and there's some interesting fans that get on social media and say things to players. She said he was at that time getting 96-97% positive tweets coming to him, which is amazing in a state like this that he's getting so much positive attention on Twitter. And it goes to show that he put himself out there as a positive guy, a responsible guy. He wasn't trash talking fans. He wasn't being a jerk. He put a significant amount of effort into establishing his brand on social media.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it really is, you know, the 2012 sports world that we live in. It really is about your personal brand, and in a way it's unfortunate because we've moved away from a lot of the team aspects of different sports. But you know, if it is going to be that way, you might as well just kind of accept it and use it to your advantage. And I'm glad you brought up Griffin, even though I'm, you know, obviously not his biggest fan ever. I'm glad you brought him up because I think that's a very tangible example of somebody using social media to attain something. So it's like all these people that are older, maybe our parents or whoever, they're like, okay, you guys say all this stuff on Twitter and it doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't really matter. Well, Robert Griffin now has a Heisman Trophy and could have a significantly different life before the Heisman Trophy. And a lot of that was due to Twitter. You know, I think there are tangible results. Have you kind of seen that as you've studied all this stuff?
Yeah. And on the flip side, did OSU cost Wheaton a chance of the Heisman by how they handled social media, by not doing enough on social media to campaign for him, or Blackman, pick one. So I think that goes both ways. I mean, you see people using it to their advantage, and for some people it costs them something. Now Wheaton's going to get drafted, he's going to be fine. But what did that cost? You know, what did that cost him by OSU not doing such a great job with social media? But in terms of somebody receiving something or life changing, this is not a student athlete example. This is just something that comes to mind. But Donald Miller, an author, his movie based off of his book Blue Like Jazz got funded because of social media. Like, studios pulled the funding for it. They were done. They had to raise, I think it was $125,000 in 30 days, and they raised $180,000 because somebody put up a Kickstarter campaign, blogged about it, tweeted about it. He had nothing to do with it. Just some fans did it, and his movie comes out, I think, in a month, purely because of social media. The movie was done, but they raised the money purely because of social media. And so it's always funny when people say they you know, downplay the significance or the impact that Twitter can have. I mean, this is a cliche statement, but it's changing the world. I mean, with the government overthrows that have taken place overseas, we're going to see extreme amount of power through social media in this election season. And you can't understate how powerful Twitter is. And it feels dirty talking about brands when you're talking about a student athlete. But they're creating a brand, whether it's going into sports or going into business. We all see the NCAA commercials, and 99% of student athletes go pro in something other than sports. Well, Twitter's going to, if they use it well, that can give them an advantage in the job market. And 91% of employers look at social networks of a candidate when they're screening them, and 68% have hired somebody because of their social media profile. And so that's a significant thing that we need to be talking to these kids about and saying, look, this isn't just what you're doing on Saturday night. You can, if you think about how you're using this, there's significant advantages that will come in long term.
Yeah. I feel like this is, basically just a 30-minute PSA from you and I to everybody out there about why they should use Twitter. It's true though. And it's funny because, you know, I started this blog and it wouldn't be nearly what it is. And not that it's, you know, anything significant, but it wouldn't be nearly what it is now without the use of Twitter, without people. I mean, people would probably email it back and forth and tell other people about it, but it spreads so fast and so vociferously through Twitter that it just, you know, the other day when the Markell Brown dunk against Missouri, I had, you know, however many thousand hits that day, and it was because of Twitter. Like, that's the only reason, you know? And I don't know. It's just, you're right in that it's definitely changing the world. Give me some people. This is kind of a random question, but I thought it'd be kind of interesting. Give me some people out there that you follow, be they sports media personalities or athletes or whoever, that you've really enjoyed following the last few months or been interested in their content on Twitter.
That's a really good question. You know, he's receiving some heat right now for some comments, but I think Darren Rovell from CNBC does a good job, and some of the stats that he puts out are fairly pointless, but some people find a lot of the stats interesting. I think some of the stuff in regards to the sports business world and the statistics, if I could speak English, that he throws out there are fascinating. I mean, he's an example of Twitter change. I mean, he got a TV show because of how he uses Twitter. So he's somebody who I think put some interesting content out there. Oh gosh, I'm trying to think of athletes and non-athletes.
Well, do you follow his arch enemy Richard Deitch on Twitter?
I do. Okay. I think he's fascinating on Twitter. There's a lot of, like, what's interesting for me is following a lot of sports writers. To me, that's fascinating. Kind of see the brotherhood that exists within that community and that industry. But the conversations that they have back and forth, whether they be contentious conversations or just talking X's and O's and strategy, it's amazing to watch that. I think Richard Deitch he's fascinating to watch on Twitter. But he and Rovell are probably not the best friends.
Yeah, it really is true that I feel like the contentious stuff is just as interesting, if not more interesting, than just the, you know, normal everyday stuff. The Twitter fights back and forth, and, you know, a little bit of it is pretentious. It's digital beer muscles or whatever you want to call it. But it's interesting because sometimes people genuinely don't like each other, and you can watch it play out in front of your eyes on your computer monitor. One thing that I was really interested in this year is to see how people handled National Signing Day, and I know you followed that pretty closely. What was your, I don't know, what did you think about it? What was your impression of the way fans and as well as the media handled just the whole National Signing Day craze?
Yeah, that was incredible to watch. Personally, I'm not a fan of National Signing Day. I think it is what it is, but I'm not going to get real emotional about the choice that an 18-year-old kid makes one way or the other. But it was fascinating to watch media. I mean, I almost had to get off Twitter that day because that's all it was. And I follow a lot of sports people, so it's my fault. But it was just, I mean, every single tweet had something to do with National Signing Day. I think NLI, National Letter of Intent, was trending nationally across the country for most of the day. And so it was interesting to watch how different programs handled social media through National Signing Day. Stanford, I think it was called Card Class 12 was the hashtag that he used, and they were tweeting videos and the Twitter handle of every recruit that faxed in his letter. So they were announcing it all, not just announcing it via Twitter, but posting a YouTube video and putting the kid's Twitter handle in their tweet whenever they announced it, which I thought was interesting. Nevada announced every signing over Facebook. So it was interesting to see schools embrace social media. It was interesting to see all the sports media, I mean, just going berserk all day long about this kid's here. Oh, this kid switched last minute. This kid did this. Oh, I can't believe this happened. Oh, this kid, he's getting ready to sign with so-and-so, but he told this. And it was fascinating to watch this all just play-by-play. And then fans just going nuts. Like, and some of them, you know, completely overreacting to how good or bad their class was. And some just obliterating these 17, 18-year-old kids for decisions that they make. And that's the stuff that really bothers me. You see kids getting death threats, wishing harm on their family.
It was insane. Did you see the Braylon Addison thing that I tweeted out?
I don't think so.
There was a mom. I mean, I can't believe I'm even saying this out loud, but there was a mom on Twitter that was quoting scripture to Braylon Addison about, you know, chastising him for changing at the last second from Texas A&M to Oregon, which is where he ended up signing. And she's sending him, you know, 5 or 10 tweets about, well, this scripture says that you need to be honest. And it's just like, is this seriously what it's come to?
Right. It's like, what are you doing? Like, what has the world come to where we've got 42-year-old moms of random kids or fans of a football team tweeting some 17-year-old stranger?
I mean, it made me feel dirty. Like, it made me feel like I shouldn't be looking at it.
And that's the stuff that makes coaches want to ban it. And understandably so, when you're, I mean, how is a 17, 18 year old kid supposed to deal? Like, this would be a great day for them. Like, they're making a significant decision.
Yeah. And to his credit, he said, hey, you know, I'm not going to reply to you. Could you please stop following me or whatever? And, you know, for somebody like that, who somebody's just coming at him, I felt like he handled it really well.
Yeah, that's important. I think I may have seen his tweet. That was one where he said, I'm not going to reply to you. Please unfollow me. You're being disrespectful to me. Something like that.
Right,
was that him?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, which is, yeah, for a kid of that age in that situation, under that kind of pressure to handle it that way, most won't do that. You know, and so it's, but it was fascinating to watch. And you see schools like today, a lot of schools have done this, but University of Houston put up a post or whatever telling their fans, because fans are – this was interesting to me. I never did the research on it, but a fan, like, I'm a booster for Oklahoma State. Like, I'm a fan of the school. I'm technically a representative of the school. I went
right,
there.
Right.
So I can't be tweeting or Facebook right on the wall, Facebook wall of a potential recruit. Like, that counts as a booster making contact with a recruit. And so Houston, University of Houston, posted saying, you know, boosters, you cannot – like, you are not permitted to interact with these recruits on social media. Now, they can't police that. They're just covering themselves because it's impossible to enforce. But it's fascinating that it's come to that, saying, look, adults, stop interacting with these 17-year-old kids. Like, use your brain. And so it's amazing that it's come to that.
But see, okay, you say they can't police that. I mean, can the NCAA just pick out singular incidents, I mean, whenever they want? Like, it just seems like – it seems like you could just kind of cherry pick if you're the NCAA, you could cherry pick on whoever you wanted to, because I promise you that happens to every school pretty much every day.
Oh, hundreds of times a day. That's what's going to have to happen to change it, is the NCAA is going to have to pick somebody, and it's going to have to be in Oklahoma, an Alabama, a Notre Dame, Ohio State, LSU. I mean, it's going to have to be a big name program, they're going to have to do something. Because if you do that, no disrespect to, let's say, Liberty University, that's not going to have any impact on college football as a whole and changing behaviors. Even if it is a big name program, I don't know that it's going to change anything. But it might, if fans realize, oh gosh, you know, look what I just cost this team that I'm supposedly so passionate and care so much about. And in some way, what's interesting is the only social media policies they have are regarding recruiting. So there's no social media policy in regards to what student athletes can and can't post or can and can't do. Their policies are all geared towards recruiting. And so they're going to have to pick somebody. I mean, even players, that's where it gets even more interesting, is that players are tweeting, current players are tweeting prospects. Say, hey, you need to come here. Hey, there's an OU player that I won't name, but he tweeted, hey, Sooner Nation, need to follow so-and-so. He needs to be the next Shark.
Yeah.
And I tweeted the guy saying, hey, like, I know that was harmless. I know you had, like, you're just doing what you think is right. You're excited about this kid. That's a violation. You need to delete that. And to his credit, he immediately deleted it. Now, he did that 10 more times to 10 other recruits later on. but it's, they just don't think, like, that doesn't cross their mind. I'm committing an NCAA violation because they think I'm just tweeting the kid.
Well,
know?
And I even saw where let's say you play football at Tennessee and you go out to eat at Qdoba and you say, hey, you tweet and say, hey, I'm eating at Qdoba with Coach Dooley or whatever. That's fine. But if you say, hey, me and Coach Dooley are eating at Qdoba, you guys should come up here and eat with us. You just tweet that out. That's a legitimate NCAA violation. And so it's like, this whole aura or this whole just set of rules surrounding, I mean, it's insane. Like, it is, it's insane how deep it goes and how many different layers it has.
Yeah. And it's weird to watch. And the NCAA has, I mean, there's no official social media policy. Everything is about endorsements or recruiting. But so they've left everything else up to the individual institutions to even some schools today. It's amazing that we're now February 2012, and there are universities out there that don't have a social media policy in place for their student athletes. Because something that we help schools with is putting together social media policies. And there are some that 2012 don't have a social media policy. It's like, well, good. I mean, and not that policies, they're not going to change behaviors, but they'll make kids hopefully at least think once or twice. They'll provide some protection for the university. But even with that, the NCAA doesn't have any rules. But then they randomly stepped in and suspended a kid from Lehigh University, a football player, for retweeting something that was racially inappropriate. Well, they don't really have grounds to suspend the kid because he didn't. Like what guideline or rule did he break? Because NCAA doesn't have one.
Right.
And so now it's, okay, they're just going to randomly step in and suspend people if they want to. And so it's there's this weird game. And they said they're not going to police. You know, we have no intention to be the social media police. But if a kid, if there is an inappropriate post, specifically during the course of a championship event, then they'll step in. Because this was during the D3 playoffs, D2 or D3 playoffs, whatever Lehigh is. And so it's, as an athletic department, how do you operate within that? Like,
but Fieldhouse, okay, coming back to Fieldhouse Media, don't you guys offer a product or a service that will be able to track things like that?
Yeah. So our two main things, main priority is education. Without education, everything else is really pointless and a severe hassle to try to do anything else. But the second thing we offer, we just launched a program called FieldTrack, a web-based social media monitoring service that tracks not only what student athletes are saying online, but what is being said to and about them. Because that's where a lot of infractions occur. Is what's, you know, if somebody tweets about LeBron Nash, and it's a business, and they've got him essentially in a promotional aspect that he has no idea. So being able to catch those types of things, being able to catch racially insensitive remarks, alcohol, violence, things sexual in nature, just things that are inappropriate that are going to cause. And it's not designed, you know, if you're a student athlete, that scares you to death because you think they're watching everything I'm doing, they're out to get me. And it's really for the protection of these kids' images because they're under such intense scrutiny, it's really not fair. And so, look, this is here to protect you from being on ESPN.com for the wrong reasons because that's not what you want. That's hard to overcome. And so that's what it's designed for. And it alerts these administrators and alerts us in real time what these kids, and it's a certain keyword, is tweeted or posted. And so they can choose. At that point, they determine, okay, this is something I can talk to the kid tomorrow morning about, or I need to call this kid right now. He needs to delete this. This could be, maybe it's a violation. Maybe it's just something that's going to cause a firestorm. But it's there. It's designed for the protection. Everything that Fieldhouse does, you know, the schools pay for it, but the student athletes are the benefactor of every service that we provide.
And have you found that most schools are pretty receptive of something, or of at least listening to something like this?
Yeah, I think it's gaining traction right now. There's been with the Uri Wright, the high school kid who Michigan decided to stop recruiting, and then got expelled from his high school the next day, all because of a series of unfortunate tweets over a 7-month period. That's really, really, you know, put an emphasis on monitoring the kid from Lehigh who got suspended. You know, that could have been, you know, the tweet couldn't have been prevented. That's where education comes in, is helping them understand what decisions to make online. But monitoring could have prevented that from being a national headline. You know, if somebody sees that, the administrator gets an email or a text within a minute of, hey, this just happened. Okay, you call the kid, it's gone, and it doesn't spread, you know, like it does. And so they're gradually being more receptive to it, and it's how you approach it. There's an issue with privacy. There's been a bill introduced in Maryland that would make forcing a student athlete to friend you or your business or a coach or administrator on Facebook, or to install a third party app on their account. There's been a bill introduced that would make that illegal, basically a violation of the Fourth Amendment. That would be an unwarranted search. And so that's something that we don't do. Like, we're not forcing student athletes. We're not gaining any access to their private information. If their posts don't use certain keywords, it's never in the system. So it's not, you know, we're not logging what they're doing. We're not creating a behavioral analysis of what they're doing online. We're just looking for certain keywords, really to help create teachable moments.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's something that it's not, like you said earlier, it's not going away. It's only gonna be exacerbated in the next, you know, 10 or 20 years. I want to wrap this up, but I do want to ask you, who OSU wise, since like you said, this is an OSU blog, who do you follow or who do you think in the media does a good job of covering OSU on Twitter, not necessarily writing about them, but interacting with fans on Twitter and you know, dumping information and just doing a good job with using Twitter the correct way as far as OSU sports media goes?
From the actual, like, on campus or just in general the media?
Well, no, like writers from the Tulsa World or Oklahoma or just whoever is doing that.
Yeah, I think we've got some really good writers and reporters in the state that cover OSU. I think Trammell from Tulsa World does a great job on Twitter, and he's a pretty funny guy, but he does a good job of getting information out, informing OSU fans. He's one of those guys that has a wealth of information and historical facts about OSU that he shares, which I think are fascinating. I think JJ from the Oklahoman does a tremendous job. John Helsey, I think he does a great job. And it's interesting to watch how they do it, given current situations. You know, with football, it was easy to cover those sports, and for those guys and for Gina, it was easy to share information. It was always exciting to share information. With basketball, it's a little bit different, just with the struggles. And so I think they've done a good job being honest about the state of the program, but sharing information that also gets fans excited and keeps them interested and keeps OSU basketball in the forefront of our minds.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think Jimmy Trammell is actually pretty funny.
He's,
you know, he talks about some different stuff, like you know, comic book stuff and different things that I'm not necessarily interested in, but he's funny when it comes to sports, and that's kind of what, you know, I mean, that's a lot of what Twitter is entertainment for people who like sports. You know, we're watching games and we get on there to see who said something funny about the game that we're watching or about, you know, the game that's upcoming or whatever. And for me, it's been beneficial because I've gotten to interact with those different guys. And like you said, Gina, and just kind of, you know, throw my name in the hat in terms of, you know, different ways that you can follow Oklahoma State sports. So it's, I mean, like we've talked about the whole podcast, Twitter's been so beneficial to what I've been trying to do in terms of creating and growing a brand.
Yeah, and I think Slater at the Ocala does a good job. And I like him really because he comes from the student perspective. So he brings something different to the table than kind of the rest of us, where either somebody's a reporter or just fans, an Oklahoma State blogger, but he comes from a different perspective. And yeah, you're right with what Twitter's done. I mean, look at the people that you've had, either you know, in post where you get the guys from the Tulsa World, Oklahoma, and Slater, where you're doing podcasts with OSU football players or past football players. None of that's possible if Twitter doesn't exist. You know, those guys, it would have taken, shouldn't say it's not possible, but it would have taken a significantly longer amount of time to accomplish those things if not for social media.
Yeah, and it's awesome. And they've all, you know, Helsley and Hasten and all those guys have been really cool to me, and they're just generally nice guys, which is a lot of fun for OSU fans. And I think people don't necessarily realize how, I mean, we've got a lot of pretty good writers in the state, you know, and guys and girls that are, you know, lend themselves to be available when you want to talk to them as fans and people that are interested in OSU. So it's pretty cool.
Definitely. Yeah, it's fun to interact with the reporters. That's another thing, kind of with the athlete thing. Nobody, you know, reporters have kind of been, unless you want to write a letter to the editor or email them or whatever, you never really had interaction with reporters. And now we get interaction with people who are literally spending, you know, every day covering these players and these teams. So that's a really unique thing that I think adds a lot of value to Twitter.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, Kevin DeShazo, appreciate you coming on. Wish you the best with Fieldhouse Media. We will definitely get some updates from you as the year goes on, and have you back on again sometime.
I mean, I appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, have a good one.
All right, bye.